This is a big one. It's a big one for you. At Jerry World next year, you are going to have to be pronouncing the name of sure to be the next great K-State tight end. Daniel. I-M-A-T-O-R-B-H-E-B-H-E. Tight end transfer from Illinois. Just announced officially. If you've been listening to Derek Young's segments on the show or following K-State Online, that won't come as a surprise to you. He's somebody that's been oft injured but was a high-profile recruit. He spent time at USC before going to Illinois. Most importantly, though, he has this insane name to try and pronounce. And, Mitch, I just don't look at the pronunciation guide that I know you've already written in there. I know you've already... Just take it down from your computer screen. Please say the last name. Well, just the full name, like you would if he were to... Say touchdown. Touchdown reception. Five-yard touchdown reception by Daniel... I-M-A-T-O-R-B-H-E-B-H-E. Please give that to me.
Well, okay, what's his number?
Number 83.
Number 83, okay.
Number 88, that's a better tight end number.
188, okay. Touchdown, K-State, number 88, Daniel Emeterbebe.
Wow. You've already nailed that. Well, that just ruined everything. That's exactly what the pronunciation...
I've already looked at it 100 times. I'm already Googling the origin of that last name. I'm trying to figure out where the hell it came from.
I don't know that this is the spelling bee where you need a language of origin.
I kind of do.
Daniel Emeterbebe. Daniel Emeterbebe. I was sitting in here trying to do this. Like, I first saw it in the release, and I was like, all right, Emat or Bebe. Emat or Bebe. No, wait. Emeterbebe. Emeterbebe. Can you say it five times fast?
Emeterbebe. 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 See, I've learned Emeterbebe. Emeterbebe.
There you go.
See, the thing is, like, I've been dealing with pronunciations and how they're typed out, how the proper way to capitalize or keep it lowercase, like how all that works. Like, I can roll them off the tongue now. Like, just throw anything at me and I'll figure it out in a couple of tries.
Then why were you saying Joe Petrakis' name wrong?
I was given some fake information, John.
I'm just messing with you. You don't need to bury anybody. That was a joke,
I'm
okay?
I'm not.
That was a very inside joke. Yes, K-State has...
Don't bring it up then.
Daniel, I just was trying to be funny and it was supposed to only be funny for us. Speaking of hoops, K-State is in the midst of a very difficult stretch right now. It seems that the frustrations are boiling over here. There have been a couple of comments that have really drawn a raised eyebrow from me, from Bruce Weber, one after the game on Saturday and one earlier today. Here after the game is an exasperated Bruce Weber talking about his team's inability to protect the basketball, 28 turnovers, sixth most all time by a K-State team, and playing against a West Virginia team that can defend but is not the old Press Virginia of years past.
Oh, God, I would hate to have gone against Press Virginia with this group. It would have been, we may have never got the ball past half court. So, but everything is a learning lesson. And, now what do they do with it?
The beginning of that is the funny part to me.
Oh, God, I would hate to have gone against Press Virginia with this group.
Just brutally honest and just candid, like a very candid reaction there. Very candid. Then we have today, when Bruce Weber was asked if K-State can play an us-against-the-world, nothing-to-lose card when they go up against Baylor tomorrow.
We have nothing to lose. We lost by infinity the first time, so I don't know if you can go higher than infinity. So, just go play, compete.
You can't, I don't believe, go higher than infinity. Although, sometimes as a kid you would try to say infinity plus one, but I do not believe the judges would accept that as a valid answer. Both of those do. I mean, listen, if you don't laugh, you'll cry, right, at this point. So I they both drew a chuckle out of me. What also gives me a chuckle is the reaction to some of this. Because, okay, I get it. I feel like I have been critical of where the basketball program is at. I mean, I'm not somebody that's trying to tell you here that everything's okay. I think things are in a pretty bad spot. But I'm also not somebody that's going to be over-the-top hyperbolic about things like these being said. Because, like so many people, I'm trying to find the specific response here. Yeah, here it is. From C. Pultz. Of all the things Bruce has said over the years that did not sit well with me, this sits the worst. Like, really? And that was about the Infinity comment. I mean, that's where we need to go with it. Things are bad, but you don't need to get carried away with your reaction to these things. Because this is exactly where Bruce just can't win. If Frank Martin or Bob Huggins said those same things, everybody would love it. Everybody would laud it and be like, see, that's a tough guy taking a shot at his team when a shot needed to be taken. If you have that reputation of being like the tough guy coach, you can say something like that and everybody will be like, well, yeah, this team needs to toughen up. They need to hear things like that. And nobody would bat an eye. But the problem is so many people are just done with Bruce that they're going to come down on anything there. You know, I mean, most of the time we hear like, oh, he's too soft. He's making excuses, making it too soft. Well, now here it is. No excuses. We got beat by Infinity last time. That's what happened. He's taken the opposite side of that, and now people crush him there as well. I just think it's as perfect an indicator of any as to where most fans are here and the lack of rationality when reacting to Bruce.
Well, going back to what you said about Frank Martin and Bob Huggins, and you know, if they said the same comments, how K-State fans would react to it, we got to remember that, you know, Huggins and Martin, when they were here, they didn't get the crap kicked out of them game after game with a super young team. It's to the point now where K-State just losing game after game in just a embarrassing fashion. I mean, I got to say, watching that game against West Virginia is probably the worst offensive display I've ever seen at K-State with my own two eyes. The 28 turnovers are just atrocious. It's to the point now. You're out of every excuse, and it's almost like he's also out of every tone to say it in. You know, how is he going to just be different every time? Because he just keep rolling with the same tone, just going to get the same reaction. He's got to try to figure out some sort of way to try to change the tone of the situation. Don't be completely depressing every single time you're in a post-game press conference, and just basically call things out at this point.
Well, right, because if the answer instead is like, yeah, we can do this, great bunch of guys, great kid, great team, we are good, we can handle this, we are fine. Well, then the response is, stop lying about the situation. Don't insult our intelligence by saying that, but telling us everything is fine. So instead, he does. He tells it like it is. He got beat by Infinity. We wouldn't be able to bring the ball past half court against Press Virginia. It's the reality of our situation. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I get that there is some level of that to any coach, right? If you're winning, people find ways to excuse things. If you're losing, all of a sudden, you have way more flaws than you ever realized. I mean, you see it happen all the time with coaches. The different, like, Bob Knight wins. Who cares if he chokes a guy and throws a chair across the court at an official or whatever? You win, you can get away with things like that. You lose, all of a sudden, this is a crazy person. Get him out of the game.
And what a terrible time this is for K-State to just continue to fall apart and get worse and worse, because the Big 12, I mean, they are the punching bag of the Big 12, because the conference has been so good that you can't you look at the schedule and you're like, well, who can K-State even beat at this point? Because it feels like they're going to go 1-17. They're going to go winless the rest of the way after an impressive performance in Ames, Iowa, which was a month ago. K-State men's and women's basketball combined have not won a game in the year 2021. But who knows when that bad streak is going to end. But the Big 12 has, what, four or five teams in the top 15 in the country? And that is just an absolute brutal schedule in a worse time to have it.
Well, you make a good point about the sad state of affairs right now, unfortunately, with K-State athletics. The end of that football season felt like it took forever. That felt like it was a long time. This basketball season has felt like a long time. There's not been much winning. The women's basketball team is going through a lot of struggles right now. I mean, there is not much winning happening in Manhattan right now. These are dark days. We're still in the pandemic. These are dark, dark days. So why not have a funny quote every now and then just to liven things up, all right? Can we liven it up a little bit?
K-State soccer might outplay K-State men's basketball in Big 12 play. Soccer might finish with more Big 12 wins than the basketball team, and they only play one time through the conference.
Very well might. And that's why I just, you know, every now and then I need to crack a smile when I hear Bruce Weber talk.
We have nothing to lose. We lost by infinity the first time, so I don't know if you can go higher than infinity. So, just go and play, compete.
Can you imagine the score bug, like the little ESPN score bug, and it just has the that little infinity symbol? The Office tie-in, Dunder Mifflin Finity. There you go, Mitch. Now we can end the segment. Dunder Mifflin Finity reference. Former Wildcat alert, I've got some things to say about Byron Pringle. I think he is playing his way potentially into more than what even Mitch Holthus suggested that he could be. That's coming up next on The Game. I tell you what, Mitch, had a chance to hear from K-State's three of the new transfers, not all of them, three of the new transfers that are coming in. Eric Munoz, Russ Yeast, Julius Prince. It's right before we came on the air today. And I don't know, man. I pride myself on a scouting ability to find my guys wherever they may be.
No.
And you know they talk about the old scouting scales. 80 is a perfect grade. Found one that I think's, we got like a 65 grade. 65, 70 grade on.
Why don't you just let me take care of the hashtag my whatevers for the show for the rest of eternity? All right? Because there's a difference between hashtag my guy and hashtag my boy. Hashtag my boy stick around for more than a year. All right? And they are usually very successful. Meanwhile, the hashtag my guys, you've had one decent one out of, what, seven?
How dare you? First of all, Donovan Williams did not stick around for a year. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Incorrect,
the average
factual statement.
That brings the average to they stick around for 9 months.
Second of all, it is a gross misinterpretation of the my guy label to say that every single dude is a failure. And Briley Moore. May I present to you the evidence of Briley Moore in the season that he just had? All right? He totally threw it in the face of everybody that said the My Guy curse was a thing. We're on a hot streak. And all I'm saying is, on the scouting scale of an 80, I'm slotting Julius Brents at a 65. There's a lot of potential there. Okay? We talk about five tool My Guy players. There's a lot of potential. All three did seem very mature and seemed like you can tell what K-State was going for from a locker room standpoint with those three. Yeast, fairly quiet. Munoz just like oozes like a guy with just a very respectful dude. That's very serious because he's had to earn his way from literally D2 all the way up to now a scholarship at a Power 5 program. But Brents has some swag to him, okay? While being very put together and seemed very mature and handled everything very well, he had the most swag of the three. And he ended the whole thing with an unprompted, like, stand up and say, go Cats, baby, into the microphone. It's really something that gets our attention here.
You are way too easy.
something that gets our attention here in the My Guy scouting department. So Brents, he's on the watch list. This is not award season, Mitch. This is not slapping a label on anybody, okay? This is, it's like hashtag college award season when they start throwing out, you know, hey, you're on the Bednarik Award watch list, and there's 65 players from across the country. I'm just saying the Prince is on the watch list.
On K-Rock, I've been on K-Rock for 8.5 years now, and after every show from the very beginning, I've always signed off with Go Cats, and you've never even given me a pat on the back for that. Like, usually, well, how do I not even land on your radar for saying Go Cats? Because apparently, Brents, that's all he needs to do is say Go Cats, and you about wet your pants.
Well, there's a certain, I mean, you have to say it a certain way. I mean, you can't.
Oh, I put a little punch behind it.
Yeah, but not the right kind of punch, I don't think. I mean, Mitch, I'm sorry. I never listened to your K-Rock shift. Never. So I can't speak to that specifically. I'm sure it's wonderful. Never listened to
Award-winning.
I'm sure.
Like number one in the market for 5 straight years now?
Okay, well, you keep trying to pitch that. It's still not going to get you on the My Guy Award watch list, okay? You're not
That's
sniffing
all right,
that
because
thing.
I'm gone in a year if I am.
You're not sniffing that thing.
And then you're doing a show by yourself.
Instead, Julius Brents is. On top of that, I already came in with the perception that he would be my favorite of the three just based on who he was as a player. I think he's like the highest ceiling player, and he's going to be around. Mitch, he's got multiple years of eligibility. The other two only have one. Brents has three. So I was excited about that. His pedigree at Iowa, his pedigree as a recruit, and his size. Like, he's got a lot of size and length as a corner. So I was inclined to like him already. And then I'm just saying, I heard how he handled himself today, dropped a Go Cats baby, and I thought, okay, well, we may be on to something here.
All right, well, next time he's available, I'm going to get on that Zoom meeting and say, listen, I got this co-host that's thinking of giving you a little dishonor. We call it a dishonor, but he thinks it's an honor of being a hashtag My Guy. But then give him the history of what happens to My Guys and see if he's okay with being a My Guy. Let's hear from it. Let's hear what he thinks of potentially being a hashtag My Guy and if it's a good idea or not.
Yes, I would love for you to hop on a Zoom call and explain to Julius Brents the backstory of Daniel Sam.
Well, somebody needs to spice those things up.
I would. Okay, well, I can't argue too much with that. Byron Pringle, shout out to BP, man. Going back to Tampa to play in his hometown for a second straight Super Bowl. I tweeted it, but it's a great story. A guy who at one point in time got in some trouble and lost a scholarship to Youngstown State is now in that spot with the 95-96 Bulls. Think about that. Let's carry that analogy out. You are watching greatness. You are the Kansas City Chiefs are the 95-96 Bulls. So that means that Byron Pringle is what? Like Bill Wennington? Luke Longley? John Paxton? Probably not Luke Longley. Like John Paxson or something like that? That's not bad. And I remember Mitch Holtis telling us weeks and weeks ago that, but I think it was before the season, that Pringle was so good on special teams that he was somebody that could carve out a career in the NFL like Matthew Slater, who, is he still in New England? I mean, he had been around in New England for like 11 or 12 years, mainly as just a gunner and a guy that was a boss on special teams. And I mean, I think that's still very much in play for Pringle. But he's actually starting to get some legitimate catches in big spots for the Chiefs. I know a lot of that has to do with Sammy Watkins being hurt. And in the Super Bowl, that may be different. But, I mean, BP's passed DeMarcus Robinson on the Chiefs depth chart. How often do you see DeMarcus Robinson actually out there anymore? And you have to keep in mind the absurdity of the weapons available to the Chiefs. Like, I think Pringle has a chance to, if he leaves, if and when Kansas City, be somebody who can be like a legitimate number three receiver that gets a fair amount of targets throughout the year for somebody in the league. I think he can. Like, he's explosive enough. The hands look a lot better than they did in college. Remember, that was always the issue for him was hands. The hands look a lot better. He's reliable. He's somebody that can really help out run blocking. So, I mean, I don't know if we're talking about like the Tennessee Titans or somebody that's going to be pounding it to Derrick Henry. That's a way that he can be very valuable to somebody. I wonder what the possibilities will be for him when his time with the Chiefs is done. He is an exclusive rights free agent at the end of the year, which would mean that if Kansas City offers him the minimum, he is beholden to that. So I would assume that the Chiefs would do that because I think Sammy Watkins is going to be gone. So probably another year with the Chiefs, but maybe not. And then I don't know what happens the year after. I'd be curious what the open market would be like for Byron Pringle at that point in time, because I think he's done enough now where it may get to the point where he eclipses what Mitch Holtis prognosticated for him, which I think was a fair assessment at the time. And still, by the way, it's a great career and a great way to make a living for a guy that's already made over $1 million in his career. It's just so damn cool. And I'm here for seeing him continue to develop while also getting the shine of playing with a group like this. Because that's the other part of it, Mitch. Other teams look at this and say, man, we want to take any part that we can from a team that is doing this. We want to get whatever piece of the Chiefs' greatness we possibly can. So you're elevated simply by being a part of a team as great as what the Chiefs are.
Well, I think there's no doubt about it. He's a much bigger role this year with the Chiefs than he was last year, even though he's not catching everything. He's not getting as many targets as he would if he was like Tyreek Hill or like Mecole Hardman, Sammy Watkins. But he is still making plays, even though he's not getting his name as much in the into the box score, because he's downfield making blocks. He is making a name for himself. And I'm glad like the national guys like Jim Nance or whoever's doing the game, like they pay attention to who the blocker is, because Byron Pringle in that way is going to get a couple of shutouts. And not to mention, he's been a solid kick returner this year with taking one back to the house against Denver. Hopefully now for the Chiefs, if the Chiefs know what they're doing, if Andy Reid knows what he's doing, Byron Pringle's going to start returning punts for the Chiefs as well. But I agree with you. He does have a bigger opportunity if he did leave Kansas City. If he had to stick around with the league minimum next year, he would make $610,000. I'm sure he'd get a little bit of a bump this year as well with whatever he makes with making the playoffs, winning the Super Bowl. But he has a pretty comfy situation right now with the Chiefs making the Super Bowl for the second straight year. He's the only guy in the game that I'm going to care about because he is K-State, and he is going to play. He's going to be out there on the field, and he made 3 special teams tackles last year, but that was really his only role in the Super Bowl last year, was a special teams guy, and he also had a really nice downfield block in the Super Bowl, but now he's going to get a little bit more of an opportunity to make a play or two.
Well, it's an interesting point that you bring up about he's got a cushy job right now. He does. It's pretty easy being where he's at, where, hey, maybe you get a couple of balls thrown your way, but the pressure is not on you to produce, and you can just go out there and block people, take care of the little things, the dirty work, make 7 figures, and get to tag along as a part of maybe the greatest team to ever play football.
I don't know about that.
Maybe be a part of the greatest run in NFL history by the time the next couple of years are over.
You can do that in 2 years?
That's pretty tempting. Same by the end of his time in Kansas City, this year, next year.
This could be it.
Okay, well, 4-year run with 3 Super Bowls in a row and another AFC championship game tacked on top of that, that's not bad. You can be a part of a historic run without the pressure on you. But I would guess that at a certain point, whenever that time comes, he would look around and say, well, I can make a lot more money than what the Chiefs would be able to pay me. I'm going to go take that payday and just get a chance to see what I could do if I were like a legitimate number 3 instead of really being like a fringe number 4, which is what if the Chiefs are healthy, he is in KC.
It is a super unique situation because he's not in a position to be like, you know, re-sign and get a lot more money because he doesn't have that kind of leverage. He's not looked upon as that kind of a star player, but he does fill a hole that Kansas City needs at times.
Well, I don't know. I think, again, because he's got the shine of being with the Chiefs.
Well, I'm saying with the Chiefs.
Okay, I was going to say, I mean, I think he's got a chance to make decent money. I can't profess to you to know exactly what the market would be for Byron Pringle, but it would be more than $600,000.
Right, but personally, I would like to see him go somewhere else, maybe make a little bit more money and have the opportunity to project himself in a bigger light, because he would get to more of an opportunity to make catches, make plays, and make more money down the road. All right. He can continue to make $600,000 a year. And if he's comfortable with that, that's great. But I know he has potential to be a lot better than that and have more of an opportunity. That opportunity just is not with Kansas City.
Speaking of, the more I'm on Twitter and the more shine the Chiefs get, the more they're back in the spotlight now because everybody was sleeping on them despite them just beating everybody this year, the more angry and defensive and self-righteous I get as a Chiefs fan. Let me just set the table for Jabroni of the Week, which is coming up next. Precursor to it by reading you the general sentiment of what I'm seeing on Twitter about Patrick Mahomes. I don't know how you watch Sunday's game and not come away completely convinced that he is on another stratosphere from anybody else in the NFL. It's just not close. Dan Orlovsky tweeted this, ESPN analyst, by the way. Go rewatch the Chiefs game. Really study the tape. There's no way you walk away telling me there's anyone at QB nearly as good as Patrick Mahomes is. There's just no way we're watching the same tape. He's in a class all himself. And all I see throughout the replies here are guys like Ray, who says he's a product of Andy Reid's genius, Tyreek Hill's speed, and Kelsey's elite tight end play. Tell me Josh Allen doesn't flourish in that same system. Yeah, Josh Allen doesn't flourish to the level that Patrick Mahomes has in the same system. Yes, I will absolutely tell you that. 100%. Josh Allen is not making the play where a free rusher comes off the edge on 3rd and 7 and Mahomes shimmies just enough to get his upper body free to zing one down the field to Travis Kelce for a first down. Like, nobody else is making those plays. The subtleties of what Mahomes does. Looking people off, the no-look passes, the arm angles. Nobody has all of that in their bag. Nobody. Nobody performs in the clutch the way that Mahomes does repeatedly, just over and over again. Like, it's... I just had not realized until this point, being a Chiefs fan and having my team possess the greatest North American athlete of all time, the way and the extent to which we all want to tear down greatness. Nobody can just let greatness be because we live in a world where there's sports programming going on constantly. There has to be some form of debate, right? You talk to anybody about doing sports radio, it's all about there has to be a debate. Nobody can be on here agreeing with each other. There has to be a back and forth. And so we're all really cultured to do that. And the same thing with social media. Like, nobody is going on there just saying, hey, this is great, this is awesome, I agree. It has to always be like an argument or a back and forth. But it's mind-blowing to me the levels to which people do this, because it's all over. So by studying the tape of one AFC championship game, you can put Pat Mahomes in a league of his own. Like, come on, man. He's got Tyreek, Kelce, Sammy Watkins, a top three O-line. I keep seeing people say like a top three O-line. Like, the offensive line is very average. Just the stretches that people will make to not just accept that what they're watching is on a different level from anything that we have ever seen. I've been a part of it, I'm sure. I'm sure that I've been a part of that typical discourse and feeding the monster that is now created that will just seek to tear down Patrick Mahomes. But it's unbelievable to me. I don't understand how those words come out of your mouth and you don't think it's anything but making you look utterly stupid. There's a lot of it out there. There's a lot.
Back to a previous comment. You said Patrick Mahomes is the best athlete out of North America. So he's great here, but he's no Messi, is what you're saying. Like, he's no Pele.
Well, we've covered this.
Julio Chavez.
We covered this the other day. I checked myself on that, and I said, well, I don't know enough about, because remember, this is when I said, what did I say, Mesut Ozil or whatever, Thomas Mueller, Bastian Schweinsteiger. I don't know what the legacy of those guys really is. I can't judge, like, athletes that are playing soccer as well as I can football. I'm keeping it at North American.
Or football.
Just keeping it at North American. Okay? Just out of fairness.
They play football in other countries.
Out of fairness to my European brethren.
Isn't there a league in Japan?
I don't know. But if that's all you have to offer, I'll just continue to rage against the apparent machine here, which is the social media and ESPN content machine. Because, I mean, the fact that I understand ESPN wants people talking. They got so much interaction out of the tweet that just had the screen grab of their graphic that gave the Bills an advantage in quarterback and number one receiver. I understand the value of clicks and engagement, and that's what you're trying to program for. But, like, that's there. You want that, but you also want to maintain your credibility. And that's blaspheming against your credibility to do that. It's a Skip Bayless Memorial Bad Takes Hall of Famer first ballot. Unquestioned first ballot Hall of Fame bad take to suggest in any way that Josh Allen was an advantage over Mahomes in that game. I mean, nobody in good faith can do that. That's like, I could come out here and say like the most outrageous of things just for the sake of saying it to drive content. Like, if I wanted to come out and do a segment that said, Bill Snyder really wasn't that great. Terry Allen was a better coach than Bill Snyder. I mean, I could say that. I could tweet that. It would get a lot of interaction. That would get a lot of engagement. My engagement numbers would be very high on that tweet. It would also destroy my credibility. And that's what we have here. That's what we have here with this Mahomes stuff. So, far be it from me. I can't stop you from tweeting. Okay, I can't. Twitter has been known to shut some people down here lately for some very not factual things that have been said. So I would caution you to be careful if you continue to tweet stuff, but I can't be the one that stops you. But just know that you're completely torching your credibility. You are taking a lighter to your credibility, covering it in gasoline, and setting it on fire. That's what you're doing. And I hope that this is appropriately reflected in Jabroni of the Week.
I hope I'm reading this right. Cuba has an American Football League called the Bacardi Bowl.
That sounds very fun.
I'm all in. Where can I watch it?
But I guarantee you, they don't have a quarterback better than Mahomes. Might have one better than Josh Allen. Could very well have one better than Josh Allen. Not, however, Patrick Mahomes. Jabroni of the Week is next.
And then everyone said, Jabroni.
You Jabronis hit the jackpot.
That Jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow.
Is this Jabroni's name?
Jabroni of the Week.
It's Tuesday. You know what that means. It means it's time for a whole pile of Jabronis. It is Jabroni of the Week here on January 26th, 2021. Three dishonorable mentions. I'll culminate with my Jabroni of the Week. And first, I'm going to start with the meteorologist that predicted that Manhattan would get a ton of snow Sunday night into Monday. I mean, we really didn't get anything at all. I mean, we got some, obviously, yesterday, as in last night into this morning. We might get some today or tonight. But I don't know if I can trust meteorologists anymore with predicting snow, because multiple times, I lost count at five over the last 9 years, we've had snow predicted at least 6 inches in Manhattan, and we didn't get anything. Five of the last 9 years that has happened.
Is that some Mitch Palm calculation
right
there?
Actually, where that comes from is I used to stay overnight in the station when we were expecting snow, and I did it like four straight winters. Did it at least once. We were supposed to get a ton of snow. And at one point, for Sunday night, at one point, it was at 9 inches, and then it was dropped down to like 3 to 4 inches, somewhere in that, and then we just didn't get anything. And we just barely got a little to cover the ground. Wasn't even sticking to the roads.
I mean,
make the roads dangerous.
I, for one, have no use for 6 inches of snow, so I'm very happy and pleased by this development.
Yeah, it's not fun. My next dishonorable mention is Gary Anderson. Well, who's that guy? Well, he was fired as Utah State's head coach after the Aggies.
I know who Gary Anderson is.
Got up to an 0-3. He had three more years left on his contract that he signed in 2018. Now he's making $900,000 a year. So Utah State owed Anderson $3 million, but he refused to accept it. He signed paperwork that would separate him from his agreement, that he wouldn't take the money. This is not the first time he has done that. One time he just upped and left Oregon State. But he was still, he walked away from $13 million that he was guaranteed. And he just walked away from it. So he has walked away in his career $16 million. Just because. And I'm thinking,
well, what's the price of happiness, Mitch?
Money.
What's the price of happiness?
Money. $16 million, apparently.
I think it's quite admirable. I think it's admirable that this gentleman feels that it's in his best interest, and maybe the best interest of everybody involved, for him to just walk away and not take the cash. You know, we could all aspire to be so virtuistic.
All right, my last dishonorable mention. He was going to be Jeroney of the Week until he talked me out of it, John. ESPN Sunday NFL Countdown host Matt Hasselbeck, because of the graphic that was released of comparing the tail of the tape of Patrick Mahomes. It was just the Chiefs and the Bills, but then there was who is the quarterback advantage, and he gave it to the Buffalo Bills with a little check mark. First of all, that's not really a tail of the tape. Like, a tail of the tape is comparing Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, and then you have the height, you have the weight, some stats, just kind of.
Well, but I mean, that's what they tried to do. It was head coach, quarterback, number one receiver,
and defense.
And defense, that's right. And so, I mean, they gave defense and head coach to the Chiefs, rightfully so. Defenses would at least be close. And then they gave the Bills the edge at quarterback and at number one receiver, both of which look absolutely patently absurd after what took place on the field on Sunday.
Obviously, we know how the AFC Championship turned out. Chiefs win 38-24, and Mahomes, he actually quote-tweeted that tail of the tape graphic with just a yawning emoji. I thought that was pretty good. I'll give Mr. Mahomes that. But finally, my Jabroni of the Week is going to go to Green Bay Packers head coach Matt LaFleur, because down 8 points, 31-23, fourth and goal, 8-yard line, NFC Championship with 2:09 to play. I mean, you need a touchdown, right? You got to go for it. But he decides to kick the field goal. A 26-yarder, Mason Crosby, it's a chip shot, makes it a 5-point game. But then you put the pressure on your defense to stop the greatest quarterback of all time, who had pretty good success throwing the football up until he started throwing interceptions, and Green Bay couldn't get the defense off the field. You literally made it to where, okay, you had a shot to potentially tie the ball game if you grow some cojones and go for it. But no, he took the quarterback out of Aaron Rodgers' hands, the MVP, and kicked the field goal, which, by the way, newsflash, still needed a touchdown.
It was a bad decision. I mean, there's no doubt. There's no real defending it. The analytics would tell you that it was closer than what a lot of us are making it out to be, but the analytics were still in favor of going for it. Just your general knee-jerk logic would tell you to go for it. The fact that, yes, you'd rather put it in the hands of Aaron Rodgers, the MVP, than your defense. I mean, all of that would tell you to go for it. I would just also say that if you're going to look for, like, a post-mortem here on Green Bay's season and what happened, I mean, it's giving up that touchdown pass at the end of the half. That's why you lost the game. We just amplify the end of the game, because that's what we do. Because you're all a bunch of people out there trying to say that Mahomes isn't as good as Josh Allen.